Today's podcast is sponsored by GenesisCare, national independent cancer care provider and experts in breast health, diagnostics and treatments.
Hello, welcome to And Then Came Breast Cancer, the third series of our podcast for everyone whose life has been touched by the disease. I'm Victoria Derbyshire, and my world changed back in 2015 when I was diagnosed age 46. The Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity wanted to create a podcast series which would be there 24 hours a day for those "what am I going to do" moments when your life gets changed too. We've asked all sorts of practical questions on the podcast, like what kind of wig should I get? Do cold caps really work? And how do I start dating again? Plus wider questions about how cancer can test your relationships, your work, your faith. We were so proud to win a British Podcast Gold Bullseye Award last year for services to the breast cancer community. Today's episode is the first of a two-parter about surgery, something which was a part of my own breast cancer treatment and will be for many of you. What kind of surgery should you have? A lumpectomy, a mastectomy, a double mastectomy? What do those terms even mean? Should you have reconstruction? And if so, when? A lot of things to think about when you're already anxious and already trying to make sense of what's happening to you, your mind and your body. I have three women with me who have their own stories and experiences to share with you in this part. And then in the second part, I'll be putting some of their points, their questions, their dilemmas and yours to an eminent breast cancer surgeon. So, as is now traditional on this pod, I'm going to ask our guests to introduce themselves.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Victoria.
Pleasure.
My name's Gloria. I am 59 now. I was diagnosed in 2018 and I had a mastectomy and two lots of reconstruction. Before I was hit by cancer, I worked in fashion, which I still do very, very minimally at the moment. I volunteer for Future Dreams, which has changed my life beautifully. Oh. And I also volunteer for Cancer Research UK.
Hi, I'm Harriet. I'm 52 and I live in Yorkshire with my husband and three children. I was diagnosed 5 years ago in April 2018 with ductal invasive breast cancer. And I had a lumpectomy and a bilateral shave to get clear margins, as well as chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and I'm on tamoxifen. By day, I'm a writer. I write for other people. I write for businesses, but I also do my own writing about this experience with cancer, as well as other things that have happened in life.
Okay. And we will come to the phrase bilateral shave in the next couple of minutes or so, because, as you know, one of the things we try and do in the podcast is explain terms so that we include everybody and don't exclude anybody. Thank you, Harriet. Emma, hi.
Hi, I'm Emma. I'm 43. I was diagnosed with stage one triple negative cancer last July. I had 17 weeks of chemotherapy and then was fortunate enough to be told by my surgeon that he would recommend a lumpectomy to take out the tumour bed because the scans had suggested that the cancer had gone because of the chemotherapy. I pushed hard for a double mastectomy with an aesthetic flat closure, yeah, which means that I wouldn't have any reconstruction or implants. And here I am 8 months later, loving life and living without breasts. And before cancer, I was a third sector chief executive running an organization part-time, which I'd set up called Change the Chat, which was all about self-advocacy for women in the healthcare and workplace environments. And I decided after cancer to go full-time with that. So that's what I'm doing now.
Thank you, all of you. That phrase, living without breasts, really has just really hit me. And I want to ask each of you briefly, before you were diagnosed, had you ever had surgery?
Yes, I'd had quite a few, unfortunately.
Okay. What about you, Harriet?
I had a gallbladder taken out when I was probably in my, I don't know, early 40s. And prior to that, when I was a very small child, I had an eye operation, which thankfully I remember nothing about.
And I'd given birth to my son under a general anaesthetic, so C-section, but otherwise hadn't been in hospital.
Okay. We've definitely talked about this in a previous episode, how women feel about their breasts before the breasts are potentially removed or changed. How did you feel
about yours before you knew things were going to change, Gloria?
I loved my breast. And I can remember when I was diagnosed, sitting in the chair, and my oncologist said to me, "It's breast cancer." I looked at her and said, "I can't believe you're telling me I have breast cancer and I'm going to need surgery. My boobs and my legs are the only things that I love about myself at the moment, and you're taking one of my boobs away."
Oh, okay.
And then cried.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that stage, it was going to be a skin-sparing mastectomy. I had been told before it was going to be a lumpectomy, then it was going to be a skin-sparing.
Okay, we're going to have to explain that term as well in a moment. I'm just totting up the jargon in a list here. What about you, Harriet?
It's such an interesting question, because I think, in all honesty, when I was sat opposite my surgeon, just about 3 weeks after having found a lump and then being through the breast cancer clinic and being told I had breast cancer, in all honesty, I hadn't really thought about my breasts at all, not since breastfeeding my three children. Mm. I was kind of out of that phase. They were there. And actually, I was just thinking ahead of this morning, just thinking about it. And I think I was more obsessed at losing my hair, because actually the one thing about me that always worked was my hair. Mm. It was just, I wasn't massively body confident. I didn't really, my body was there and I used it, you know, and it kind of worked generally. But I think I was more upset with the prospect of going bald and losing my eyebrows and losing that sense of my facial identity than I was with anything else going on. And I think when I sat opposite the surgeon, and the first I thought was, she said to me, "Harriet, I've scheduled you in for a mastectomy." And I remember then thinking, "Oh, okay, I hadn't expected that." And as it turns out, I ended up having chemotherapy first in order to try and shrink the tumour so that I could have a lumpectomy and so you could save my breast. But I think my attitude was very much, just do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Just, they've served me very well, thank you very much, but I'm in a different phase now.
Yeah, totally. I can totally relate to that in terms of the hair versus the breast. Not that it's a hierarchy, but I felt the same as you, Harriet, in terms of, yeah, if there's cancer in the breast, just get it out, you know. Emma, how did you feel about your breasts?
I love my breasts. They were magnificent. I adored them. They were the only body part that I regularly pampered. So I would go and get my breasts fitted for a new bra every quarter. Mm. I would go more often than I would go and get a haircut sometimes. You know, I would struggle to get my hair coloured and my hairdresser would be getting me told, but I would always go and get new bras and I loved them. That said, I think, you know, obviously boobs are the ultimate body part when it comes to feminist body politics. And such a lot goes on with our breasts that we're not supposed to talk about. So
like what?
When I was 18, I was ripped and drugged. And when I woke up, somebody was touching my left breast. And for the first couple of years of my 20s, I had to really work hard through counselling and personal work to disassociate that experience with my body so I could go on and live and enjoy sex and all of those things. And so, of course, that was there at the back of my mind when I was making decisions about surgery. And then when I was 32, I had my son and I wasn't breastfeeding for lots of different reasons. And there was lots of judgment, including from friends, actually, about how I chose to feed my child. So all of that, I think, is baked into our breasts, that, you know, there's such a hot topic, I think, you know, where society tells us what we should and shouldn't do with them. And that was really at play when I was making a decision to remove them. But I did. I loved them. And there were 36 double F at the time of surgery as well. So they were substantial in many ways.
36 double F. Now, Emma, just, I need to, first of all, I am really sorry about the experience that you went through at 18.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I was not necessarily expecting that. Obviously, as you know, victims of sexual assault and rape are guaranteed lifelong anonymity. I don't know if your case went to court, but I just want to check that you're really comfortable with telling us and the people listening about that.
I am. I do.
And having your name associated with it.
Absolutely, yeah, okay. I do. I speak about it publicly now, so okay. I'm very happy to do that.
Okay. And so I am really interested in the link between what happened to you at that age and this decision to go for a double mastectomy, even though the advice to you, as I understand it, was that you didn't necessarily need a double mastectomy.
Yes. Yeah. So there was no cancer in my left breast at all, ever. And I had one tumour, 36 millimetres in my right breast. But I knew from the day that I was told, this looks like cancer, prepare for chemo, my surgeon said, you'll probably end up having to have a lumpectomy. And I said, no, it'll be a double mastectomy.
Right.
I just knew.
Should we just explain what a lumpectomy is? It is what it says on the tin. They take a lump out of your breast. A mastectomy, a single mastectomy, is removing the one breast or removing the tissue inside the breast and perhaps keeping the skin over the top. And a double mastectomy is obviously both being removed. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Do carry on.
And when I had my final chemo scan actually before my last session of chemo, and it was suggesting that there was no cancer remaining. So in that instance, they still do a lumpectomy, but they take the tumor bed and some margins around where the tumor was originally. So when I walked in to see my surgeon, he said to me, we're recommending a lumpectomy. What are you going to talk us into? And I was like, double mastectomy all the way.
Wow.
But I had to be very careful because all of my healthcare professionals seemed to think that I was in strong mind to make this decision. And I was worried because of what had happened when I was 18, but also because my mom had had a single mastectomy 11 years previous. And I was wanting to make sure that I wasn't making decisions based on fear. Or if I'm honest, that I wasn't punishing my left breast for what had happened to me when I was 18 in some subconscious way. And my healthcare professionals were saying to me, they were amazing. They were absolutely amazing. And they were giving me this choice, which so many women don't get, especially women who don't need mastectomies. So at that point, that's when I took myself off to Maggie's in Edinburgh. And I mean, I've got my charts here. They said I'm the only person who brought a Venn diagram to talk about this stuff. But I had, I had flow charts and everything.
Let me describe what you're showing, because you're joining us on Zoom. And what Emma is now showing us is, so you've got a circle in the middle, which says, read out the words in the middle in red.
Factors impacting my decision.
And then shooting off from arrows from the circle are the various, presumably, pros and cons. I can't quite see all the words. But yeah, so you went to Maggie's.
Pros and cons is the next list.
Oh, yep. Wow. Okay.
But this one is the fact. So factors are things like my past, being raped, being judged for breastfeeding. B is my personality. So I'm always all or nothing. There's no middle ground with me in anything. C was fear. D was scientific fact from my oncologist. Mm-hmm. And I went through all that process with Maggie's, and they were brilliant, Maggie's in Edinburgh. And that really helped for me to clarify. And I knew deep down, I trusted myself deep down to know that it wasn't anything to do with that. But I've gone through this whole entire process and I've never seen one sign. I haven't been asked once about, have I been a victim of sexual violence? And I know there are countless women out there who have been and who may be making decisions on their own based on all of this messy stuff in their head that it's, we're not just about cancer.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the benefits of going to somewhere like Maggie's or Future Dreams, because not every charity sees breast cancer through the holistic lens of being a woman. And Maggie's certainly did that for me. And I know that Future Dreams do that for people too.
Yeah.
But it was, so I had to separate those two things out and be very clear in my mind that it wasn't anything to do with the past. And I'm pleased to say I don't think it was, but I had to check myself.
Harriet, I can see you listening to Emma describe her experiences and ultimately her thought process, and you were taking it all in. I'm not sure you were necessarily expecting Emma to talk so openly as well, which we're really grateful for. But what were you thinking as Emma was talking?
I think firstly, Emma, my goodness, I'm so sorry, and I'm just blown away at everything that you've just said and how articulate you are, and for going through breast cancer on the back of everything else. And I think as to what was going through my head was first and foremost was that. But also I think it makes me reflect that I walked into that appointment with my surgeon, the breast cancer, and with my husband, already knowing, having been through mammogram, ultrasound, biopsies, and having been told, look, we're 90%+ certain it's breast cancer. Walked back in to meet the surgeon the following week. And she told me how ductal invasive, common form of breast cancer. We know what we're doing. She was brilliant and I trusted her within an instant. But I think what struck me was how quickly I moved into, right, okay, it's my body, I get it, it's my body, you're making decisions, informed decisions about what's best for me and my body. You tell me when I need to turn up, I will turn up to the appointments and I will be led by you. Mm. And I reflect on that a lot because I didn't necessarily challenge what I was being told, but I think part of that was because I felt immediate trust in my surgeon. She properly listened to me. And I always remember it was quite interesting actually. I always think she said to me, Harriet, you're going to have 8-9 months of treatment. It's going to be a slog, but you will get through it. And I remember repeating that back to her afterwards. And she was like, oh, I'm not sure I'd have said that. But there was just something in her that I thought, right, listen to her. Just listen to what she's saying. She has seen countless other women in front of you. And there was something about the way that she talked to me that I thought, no, just trust what she's saying. So despite me saying, you know what, get rid, I'll have a mastectomy if you think that's the right thing for me to do. When she said, no, actually, I want to come back in a week's time, we'll have final results, and let's try you on chemotherapy first. And she was right. There was always that element of doubt, would chemotherapy work in that sense?
Sure.
But it did. But I think it's that sense of me not challenging, me not questioning, that I think is always there. But that's I think that's part of who I am and how I operate. I tend to take things in and nod. I'm a bit of a rule follower. So if I think someone in a position of power who's, you know, far more intelligent and knowledgeable than me, who am I to challenge them? So I think that's what's going through my mind.
Thank you so much for sharing something so personal. I think when you get a breast cancer diagnosis, a lot of the times, most of us as women, when you say that to another woman, you're thinking it's the most horrific thing that's happened in your life, when actually, sometimes it's just absolutely not.
Mm.
And Emma has brought that point out to us today. And I know my life was absolutely shocking before I got diagnosed. I was dealing with my 15-year-old daughter who was having issues with her sexuality, with her going through her exams. Our relationship was just at rock bottom. And I was dealing with her father, who was just awful to me. And then I got this cancer diagnosis and it was almost like, oh my gosh. So I just think us women have so much to go through. And I know men do too, but we're talking about us as women today.
Yeah.
And I personally felt at the time when I was diagnosed, what on earth is going on? I cannot believe that I've been through so many shocking things. Now I am dealing with a breast cancer diagnosis. But for me, the way I got through it, it was almost like, actually, Gloria, this is telling you it's time for you to now look after yourself. You have been there for your daughter, for your ex. No one has been there for you. And I do not mean my family and everything are lovely,
of course,
but I do not live near them. I was here on my own and I was giving for everybody and I was just broken and just broken even more when that cancer diagnosis came. But it was time for me to stop and think about myself and actually put myself first.
Yeah. Which women rarely do / say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think myself, Harriet and Emma, we needed or chose one operation. That didn't happen for you, Gloria. Fill us in.
When I was diagnosed, it was first going to be a lumpectomy. And every week I went in, it was no, we found more, or it's bigger. So it went from a lumpectomy to a skin sparing mastectomy, where they would keep my skin and my nipple. And then the final time I went in and it was, no, it's much bigger. We now need to take your nipple. And I was just absolutely devastated. So I said, I do not want to wake up flat. What are my options? Mm. And my surgeon said, right, we can do an implant. We don't know at this stage if you are going to need chemo or radiotherapy. An implant is the best way for you to go because we don't want to touch any of your other skin just in case, because it can get damaged from other treatments. So I believed her, and I went along with that, had that surgery, woke up, felt okay. My nipple had gone, and actually I was still alive, so I was just happy. I didn't actually care that I didn't have a nipple at that stage. But when my bandages were taken off, I really did not like the difference in my breasts.
What did you, when you looked in the mirror, what did you see?
I couldn't take the bandage off myself.
Right.
I literally, and when my, it was my oncologist who took it off, and I wasn't even really looking in the mirror. I could just see it, and I was just really upset. I just really cried. I wasn't as ample, but I did have a good side breast, and now I had this, and I can only describe it. This is how I say it. It looked like the size of my fist, and then I had an ample 55-year-old breast, and then I had this rock here, and I was just so unhappy, and I just said, I cannot live with this. I cried.
Did you?
And I said to her, I'm not ready for you to take the bandage off because I just can't look at myself.
Right.
And that is how I felt. And I kind of, after a few appointments, I said, look, I'm really sorry, and I would prefer to have had a double mastectomy and for them both to look like the same. That's what I had the problem with, the fact that they were just so different. And she said to me, Gloria, there is no way that you would want both of your breasts removed. And I said, well, actually, I would. I know what I'm like. I like things in order. I like things to look neat. I like things to look nice, even if they are both
hideous. You want a bit of symmetry.
You want symmetry. Mm. I had, as my friend said, a 25-year-old boob and a 55-year-old boob, which just didn't look good. Mm. She was fantastic, and actually, having set up my Instagram page, The Cancer File, to bring awareness, to being at Future Dreams and joining a few other support groups, it was them that actually said, you know, you really need to advocate for yourself. If you're not happy, you need to let them know. Because our surgeons do fabulous jobs. They're saving our lives. Mm-hmm. And for them, even if it looks okay, they're happy because they've saved. They've done the important part. They have saved your life.
And there is a long queue of other women that they need to be
so
working with.
So this is what you also have to think about as well. That, you know, so I was very happy they saved my life. But mentally and emotionally, I could not live with this. I had a prosthesis, which was the wrong colour as well, for a little while. And then I said,
what colour was it?
So it was pink, because I didn't find any dark coloured ones. Really? I mean, I got it on Amazon. I wasn't offered anything from the hospital, as wonderful as they were.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but again,
has that changed now?
It's definitely not changed as much, but definitely I'm doing a little bit of advocating for that as well, because it's really quite important.
Too right.
But I was happy for a little while to put a little prosthesis in, and then I thought, no. I went back to my oncologist and said, look, I just can't live like this. And she said to me, well, Gloria, we will send you for a show and tell, and you can go and look at the DIEP.
Let's do some explanations now. Right, what the hell is a DIEP?
So this is where...
That's what listeners are shouting at their devices.
So this is where the most amazing surgery, where they take, like, you're cut from hip to hip, and they take the fat, the muscle, and the... and your veins, basically, and they make you a breast from your own tissue.
Okay, because you just described that as amazing, and I've got to be honest, the way you've described it, it sounds horrific.
It is horrific. There's no getting away from the fact that it is brutal surgery. It's a 9-hour surgery.
Oh my God.
But when you are someone who has an ample breast, and you've got one that is kind of still big, and you've got one that just looks like a little rock on your chest, the thing for me was to get that implant out, because it just felt absolutely awful. and have something that felt like my own skin, that would age like my skin, that would droop like my skin.
Understood. Just pause there. Let's explain a prosthesis, and then we'll explain what a bilateral shave is. What's a prosthesis?
So a prosthesis is a plastic mould that is made to look like your breast, and you can use them in various sizes to fill out, to make yourself look...
To put them in your bra.
More presentable, you can pop them in your bra.
So you to equalise your boobs.
Yes.
Yeah. Bilateral shave?
So I had a lumpectomy, and then saw my surgeon a week or so afterwards, and she said, I need to go back in and do what's called a bilateral shave. And my understanding is that she just went back in because she needed to get clear margins. She needed to go back in and just double check that everything was out. I have to say that I am the world's worst with technical terms. So I read these words and then I have my own interpretation and I make sense of it in my head.
Yeah.
And all I hear is I'm getting clear margins.
Okay. And again, clear margins is what no it evidence. Says on the tin. Go on, just explain it, Harriet, if you can.
Yeah, so there's no evidence of disease. So they've got all the tumour, and I think it was the term Emma used earlier, the tumour bed, everything is out.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. So Gloria's described how she felt after her first surgery, and she was really unhappy and shed tears. And that's completely understandable. Emma, I want to ask you, having gone for a double mastectomy, which medically you didn't necessarily need, what did you feel when the surgery was done and the bandages came off?
Well, I felt a mixture of things. Overall, I was really delighted, and I only had one wee panic the day after surgery, which I'll come back to in a moment. But my surgery didn't get me as flat on one side as I could have been. It sometimes happens, especially if you're larger. So at the moment, if you looked at me naked, my right side, which is where the tumour was, is very much, it's to the bone. I can feel my bones through it, and it's almost a little bit concave. If I lay down, you could rest a little ball and ball in there. And sometimes if I have a dress on, you can see, like, it almost looks like an imprint of where you would just stick the boob back in.
Yeah.
My left side, my son calls it my wee banana, and I've got like a tiny little extra bit of skin, which looks a little bit like a banana on my left-hand side. And that confused me for a little while, because I was telling everybody that it was a flat closure and I had this extra bit. And then once I started to remind myself, it's not about what other people were thinking, it's about what you know, I was able to feel more happier about that. But the actual having gone flat and removed my breasts, I was really happy with. And I only had one panic the day after I came out of hospital. So I stayed in hospital one night, came out, my friend had come up to look after my son with me and my husband, and they were chatting. And it was that thing that sometimes happens, I think, when you leave hospital. It happened after I brought my son home. It gets dark, and then you have this almost primal instinct. And my instinct in this instance was, oh my God, what have you done to yourself? And my friend and my husband were chatting away about nothing in particular. And this feeling was rising. What have you done? What have you done? What have you done to yourself? So I just picked myself up, went to the bathroom, took my top off, looked in the mirror and said, you've had a mastectomy. You chose it. Your choice. Good. All good. And then came away. And after about half an hour that passed, but it was real fear. I could feel it, you know, rising. Yeah. But I think that was probably steroids and all kinds of other things as well. But overall, I have to say I've been really, really happy with the choice. I've never looked back. I'm seeing my surgeon next week to talk about whether I remove the little bit of extra skin.
Yeah.
On my left, I've also got a little bit of, some people call them dog ears, some people call them angel wings. I think that it's basically a bit of chub on my right-hand side. And to anybody who's not had a mastectomy, it's essentially what you get when you put a bra on that's a bit too tight, but it's just there all the time. And the only thing that's annoying is because as my feeling is starting to come back to a certain degree, it feels a bit heavy for me. But I think at this present time, my surgeon has said he'd go back in and do whatever I ask him to do, which is wonderful. He very much understands the mental health aspect of it. Right now, I want to go through a solid year of not being prodded and poked by a medical professional. And I think I might just carry on living like this, if I'm honest. I feel like it's me and I've started to be okay with it. So I think that's probably where I'm going to sit, probably.
Yeah. What about you, Harriet, after your lumpectomy?
I have to say the surgery aspect of my treatment was probably my absolute low point. And there are a few reasons for that. And it's something that both Emma and Gloria have touched on already, in that when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, it came at a point in my life where, when I told my teenage son, who was then, gosh, I don't know, 15, he said, "Are you effing kidding me?" Because we'd only been living in Yorkshire for 6 months. We'd moved from the other end of the country. We were living in a rental. My parents had both died in the same, a couple of months apart, just a couple of years earlier. My sister had had breast cancer. My brother had moved over to Japan. You know,
there was a lot going on.
There was so much. Yeah. And I hadn't actually really started grieving for my parents, or particularly my mum. Mm. So when breast cancer came along, it really was, you know, do I have enough in me to just keep going? And I think that's partly why I was so pleased with my surgeon, because she just literally helped me just to keep putting one foot in front of the other. But I think because I had chemotherapy first, I felt, you know, that was a routine, a rhythm and routine for a period of months. I knew what I was doing. I kind of factored in my PIC line checks every week with a trip to Aldi on the way back. I'd always treat myself to the special aisles on the way, all these little things. And then when I came out of chemotherapy and it was into surgery, and surgery by very nature of the beast, it's very clinical. I was in a different part of the hospital. I didn't know anyone there. The day unit, on the day I had my lumpectomy, I was there alongside women having completely, you know, varicose veins, dental surgery, all sorts of other things. And you're there, and it's, and I think it was at that point, sat in the ward waiting for surgery, where literally it all felt like it started to hit me. So the surgery itself, it worked, it did what it was meant to. I really struggled recovering from the anaesthetic. I was physically sick and I was kept in overnight rather than being able to go home. And that was, it was not easy. But I say all of this against the backdrop of knowing that, and this one, I only had a lumpectomy. I kind of say to you, that's weird.
Now
I have
that's
that.
So interesting, because Emma is shaking her head in disagreement. Gloria is shaking her head in disagreement. Harriet, you're laughing. I have heard this from women before. I only had a lumpectomy. Let me ask you why you are saying it in those terms.
Because I think, you know, the thing with my cancer was, I had the most common form. A, I'm still here. Mm. I'm here and I'm 5 years and I'm no evidence of disease. I tolerated chemotherapy. Yeah, it was horrible, really horrible. It was brutal, but I tolerated it. I wasn't hospitalized with infections like I know other women were, like my sister was. So I kind of look at my landscape 5 years on, I'll admit, and all the things that the surgeon was saying to me, you know, you've got a common one, all those things I could hear. Well, you know, try and save your breasts and give you a lumpectomy. It felt brutal at the time, but in my head I was saying, you know what, Harriet, this is okay in terms of the breast cancer world.
It's kind of a result.
Yeah. And it meant that my treatment was bookended. So from that first round of chemotherapy, or having my PIC line put in, to that final round of radiotherapy 9 months later, I'm on tamoxifen. But it felt bookended. And I think that's why when I listen to Gloria and Emma and others talk about reconstruction and that sense of it staying with you for far longer than it necessarily physically has for me. My hospital appointments are few and far between now. I go for my annual checkup. You know, for me, it was a couple of months ago and I'm still, you know, no evidence of disease. But it's given me time and space. But that period, that autumn of 2018 was really, really awful, really horrible. And that wasn't necessarily the act of the surgery. The surgeon was great. That bit all worked. But mentally and emotionally, the worlds kind of collided.
Got you. Let's just talk about first of all, Gloria and Emma, why did you shake your head in disagreement when Harriet was saying, I only had a lumpectomy. Why?
Because a cancer diagnosis is a cancer diagnosis, and it literally does not matter whether you had a little, big, it's cancer surgery. It is something that changes your life, and it changes your life no matter how big your scar is. Mm. Your life is changed forever.
Mm. Yeah.
Cancer is cancer, and yeah, it's it's no different. I've had people that have said, oh, well, you know, no, I'm sorry. It's all cancer.
Emma?
Yeah. Exactly the same. There's no only in this. There's no only. And it's a whole package of emotional and mental and physical trauma. And I hear women the same. You know, when I go to groups, they feel apologetic because I'm flat or because I lost my hair or whatever it is. But we've all gone through something. We've all gone through something absolutely horrendous. And I understand the guilt. I've got that guilt feeling as well at the moment. That's something that I'm really working hard on.
What do you mean?
I feel guilty because I feel guilty because I'm here with no evidence of disease. And then the guilt will take hold for so long, and then I'll feel panicked in case it comes back. And so then I try to desperately find the guilt again. And when I think I heard somebody say in your podcast, Victoria, right at the very beginning of my journey, that they felt guilty. And I thought, if I get the chance to have a second chance, I'm not going to feel guilty. No way. But I do. Yeah. I also feel guilty of other things. Like, you know, I fast-tracked myself because of a situation where I didn't think I was going to get seen in the NHS quickly enough. So my friend said, go private. And I said, I can't afford that. And I remember saying, it'll cost £4,000. And she was like, you've made that up. I'm going to find out how much it costs. And it cost £130 to see the surgeon privately. And I could afford that, thankfully. But I felt so guilty. And when I ended up back in the NHS, I actually was having an ultrasound and I was sobbing on the table as they were diagnosing me because I felt so guilty that I'd been private the day before. Gosh. And so I think women have this whole thing that I think every cancer survivor, that term makes me feel funny at the moment, but I think every person who's gone through cancer feels it. But I think women particularly, the guilt is strong. And I think that's where that language comes in, only. And, you know, but you've been through a hell of a deal, and by the sounds of it, for a lot longer than cancer, you know. So you've got all of that added into your situation as well, Harriet, you know. So, no apologies.
No.
No more.
In the second part of this two-parter, we are going to talk to an eminent breast cancer surgeon. People listening will have all sorts of questions, and please do send your questions to us, and we'll put them to our surgeon. But if you had a question now, all of you have very different experiences. If you had one question now, and obviously you can ask your own surgeon, but just put it out here on the podcast, Gloria, what would be your question to a surgeon?
I found it quite strange that after having my reconstruction, I'm not having scans or anything done on that particular breast. Yeah. And I haven't had until I had a few problems. Mm. Obviously, we're monitored for the first 5 years because that's when that reoccurrence can happen. So I want to know why we're not having scans on a reconstructed breast where breast cancer could possibly still be.
Emma?
I'd ask, why are many surgeons still reluctant to remove healthy breasts when actually if the woman wants it, it can create a really healthy mind, which leads to a healthy life?
That's also a brilliant question. And for what it's worth, let me chuck in my own experience. So I was recommended a single mastectomy, and my consultant, Manish Kattari at Ashford and St. Peter's Hospital, which is fab, said to me, yeah, single mastectomy. And you know, you go through that. Well, what if it comes back in the other one? Let's get them both off. I said, please, you know, would it be possible to have a double mastectomy? And he said, look, if you want that, I will do that for you. But you have a healthy breast with all the sensations and the feeling that that has. So I just want to put that out there. Have a think about that. And I always do that. Well, if it was your wife, what would you do? I always put them in the position, you know, force them into my shoes sort of thing. And he said, well, I would recommend that she only had a single because for the same reason. And so in the end, I went for a single. And my boobs looked like, Gloria, what yours did when you woke up and cried. And I'm really happy with the way I look, even though it's not symmetrical. And, you know, as you say, I've got a 55-year-old boob and I wouldn't quite say it was a 25-year-old boob, but 25-year-old's boob. But I don't care. I literally do not care. And we're all different in that respect. Okay, I'm going to ask you all now how you're feeling about your shape. Gloria.
Well, I have to say...
She's got a massive smile on her face, ladies.
Go on. See.
I absolutely love my boobs now.
Woo!
They look, I have to say, they look blooming amazing.
Do they?
And, yes, I'm even willing to whip my top up so you can see them in this bra,
okay.
Ladies.
All right, hang on.
Wait for this.
There's people, you're happy for this, yeah? You're comfortable.
This would never have happened before.
Okay, right, so Gloria is rolling up her grey T-shirt in the most gorgeous navy blue lacy bra.
I did a shoot for, I don't know if I'm allowed to advertise, yeah, or whatever, but I did for Lounge for Breast Cancer Awareness.
Right.
And I now have their lacy bra adorning. I mean, I'm sorry.
You look gorgeous. What size are you? What size are you?
I'm a 38 double D.
38 double D?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
you look amazing.
So I did. My plastic surgeon, I went in on the day when he was marking me up and I said, I need to come out of here looking like a supermodel. I want them hiked
No
up.
Pressure. No pressure.
I want them hiked up to my neck, I said. And I was very happy.
Oh,
I was
so pleased.
Very ill, though. I had to. I got an infection and all of that, but I would go through it all again to have them. And then I got, last November, I got a new nipple as well, which is absolutely incredible.
What do
there
you
is
mean?
Slight...
What do you mean you got a new nipple? What does that mean in practical
because
terms?
Because it meant that because I had to have my nipple taken off.
Yeah.
I still had my nipple on my
other
good
side,
boob.
Yeah.
I needed them to both look the same. So where they had cut and made an incision, they kind of went in, made another cut, just twisted some skin.
No way.
And made it into a nip. Honestly, it is incredible because I just didn't want a tattoo.
You can say no, Gloria. Can you show me the nipple that they created?
Yes.
Do you mind?
No,
are
not
you sure?
At all.
Okay.
I've shown everyone at Future Dreams has seen
it. Right,
I'm
fine,
literally
fine,
always
fine.
Whipping my bra. This is what I got for Christmas, girl.
That is incredible. So it looks like it. What do you call it? The areola.
Areola. Yes. Yeah. So this is where I would have a tattoo.
Yeah. And
at
so they,
some point.
So
this is my own skin that they kind of just twisted
so
around.
So it's not as high as a normal. It's not as what's the word? I can't think of the word.
It's not protruding
as much. It's not protruding as much, but it looks like a nipple. Yes. Okay. That is.
Gloria, would you the camera's behind you to your right. Would you mind? Could we see it on the camera if you're okay with that? Yeah, oh my word. Wow. That's incredible.
It is amazing what they can do.
Stunning.
It really is.
Love it.
So I went from crying to, I mean, this
being
is why I'm always getting them out. I mean, literally.
I love it. Harriet, how do you feel about yours?
Lordy, I'm not sure how to follow that. fabulous, Gloria. I love it. I feel okay, actually. It's funny because I think prior to the surgery, I'd had a clip attached to the tumour. So the morning of surgery, I had a little, it was almost like a very thin coat hanger coming out. I had blue dye injected. So for a while, I had a blue Smurf boob. Mm. And I think... I feel okay. It's funny, if I'm lying down on my front, if I'm in Pilates or doing anything, I can feel kind of a bit of a dip where the tumour was taken out. But there's very little scarring. So the surgeon went in around the nipple area. And I feel fine. I can feel the dip. I'm kind of, my hand is kind of hovering where the tumour was. And I can feel the dip where it was taken out. And there is a bit of asymmetry between my two breasts, but they were probably never even in the first place.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But I feel okay. I feel okay with them.
Emma,
I love being flat. Love my scars. I draw attention to them, so I have t-shirt with heart shaped nipples and disco balls and things where nipples should be, because I like to draw attention to the fact that. women can make choices about their bodies. I still celebrate, as you can see, I still celebrate other women's breasts, and I certainly don't feel anything inferior or lesser than. And I understand that not every woman feels like that when they've had to have a double mastectomy. I know I'm not every woman, but I feel really great about it. The stranger thing is to not have any nipples, actually, than boobs, to be honest. Not having nipples is really weird. And have a lot of it. Yeah, very weird, especially when it's cold and you still feel your nipples go hard. Oh, wow. And there's a little bit of phantom nipple thing going on. But I love being flat. I've always been a hugger, and hugs are much more intimate now because you can get really close, as is sex. And it took a while to get used to my body. The first time I tied my laces from a standing position and stood up, I nearly fell over backwards. You know, there's 13 pounds less on my chest than I didn't realize. But no, I do. I love it. I've got a little bit of a complicated relationship with this loose bit of skin because I don't really know what I want to do with it. And that's not normal for me. I'm normally a quick decision maker and I
crack on. Yeah.
But it's my skin. And it's my body, and I love her. I've stopped calling my body it through all of this as well. You know, my body is her, she, I love her. And I'm really happy. I'm really happy with it. And can I just say, this podcast really helped me. Before I told anybody of my diagnosis, I would listen to this, and you helped me tell my son and everything. So in January, this was one of my resolutions to try and get on here. So thank you, because I'm really delighted. It's been really brilliant, and it's been great to meet everybody.
I'm so pleased to hear that. I really am. Thank you all so, so much for being so open. I actually feel privileged to hear you speak in these terms. So I'm really grateful. And the way you have talked today, it's going to help so many people. Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's been an absolute pleasure. So lovely to meet you, lovely ladies.
And you too. It's been great to have this opportunity to reflect 5 years on. It's interesting. It's good.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you. Really lovely to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being so honest. And Then Came Breast Cancer is brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, which provides practical, emotional and psychological support for anyone diagnosed with the disease. And it is a Factory Original and 6 Foot 6 production. Thanks for listening.
Our podcast is intended to be a message of support for everyone who has been touched by breast cancer. And that's why our guests share their personal and unique stories with you. They express their personal opinions, which don't necessarily reflect those of Future Dreams or our sponsors. Our guests' individual stories do not constitute medical advice and shouldn't be treated in any way as a substitute for professional expertise or a consultation with healthcare professionals. This podcast is not offering to treat your cancer, but it is trying to help by talking about it. So hopefully you realise that you are not alone.